This is a topic that I sort of came onto after having read an article that Rav Herschel Schechter wrote back in 1982 in the RJJ Journal of Halacha. And it was really my reaction to that article that inspired me to really investigate this topic more fully. So I don't know if anybody actually has ever seen Rav Schechter's article on it, but what I really did in my article is really a response to his article. Now there are several things that I would like to discuss tonight. First of all, see, this is a very complex topic because it affects a lot of aspects of our lives. So the first thing that I want to discuss, I can't go over all the details of my halachic arguments, but I would summarize what those arguments are. I would like to address also what many Rabbanim today are doing. I'm specifically referring to those Rabbanim who do prohibit using contraception unless you get a special heter from the Rav who would permit it. And then I would also like to discuss psychologically why I think what is being done today in so many circles is potentially very harmful for people. Now, in my article, I addressed three halachic issues. Now, the mitzvah of pruervu is a mitzvah saseh she'en hazman grama, which means that it's a positive command, but it's not time-bound, which means that a person can fulfill it at a young age, person can fulfill it at an older age, and whenever the person fulfills this mitzvah, you know, the mitzvah is a commandment on the man and not on the woman. And whenever he fulfills that mitzvah, whether he's 25, 45, the fulfillment is exactly the same. As opposed to other mitzvahs, I say, which are time-bound. For example, eating matzah at the Seder, obviously you can only fulfill that mitzvah the night of the 15th. Once the night passes, you can no longer fulfill the mitzvah. So concerning the mitzvah of procreation of pruervu, which is not a time-bound mitzvah saseh, there are three issues that I addressed. The first one is whether delaying the performance of a mitzvah that one basically has almost a lifetime to fulfill, obviously not a full lifetime, but one has many years to fulfill. What if one delays in fulfilling that mitzvah? How do we view a delay? And there really are three halachic considerations about delay. And this would be true not just for this mitzvah, it would be true for any mitzvah, saseh, that is not time-bound. We're focusing on this particular one, but the issue that I'm raising would be true for any mitzvah, saseh, she'en hazman grama. So the first issue is whether delaying in the mitzvah is considered as though you have canceled the mitzvah during the time of the delay. This is a very interesting concept about, even though eventually, let's say, you'll fulfill the mitzvah, but let's say I delayed for 5 years. So is it viewed as though for 5 years I canceled the fulfillment of the mitzvah, as though I have decided not to fulfill the mitzvah for those 5 years, so I have violated the Torah for those 5 years, notwithstanding that in the sixth year, when I do fulfill the mitzvah, I'll have fulfilled it completely. But maybe during the 5 years that I delayed, it would be considered as though I have not fulfilled the mitzvah, I have canceled the mitzvah, and I would therefore be violating the Torah in so doing. That is one issue. The second issue is what we call Zrizin Makdimin L'mitzvah. That any time that we have a duration of time to fulfill a mitzvah, I'm sure you're all familiar with this, that Zrizin Makdimin L'mitzvah means that the conscientious try to observe, fulfill the mitzvah as soon as possible, not to wait. Now, Zrizin Makdimin L'mitzvah does not imply that if you do wait, that somehow you have violated the Torah. That's the first concept that I raised. This is not a violation of the law itself. This just means that you did not fulfill what would be like a hiddur mitzvah, something that would enhance by doing it as soon as possible. It shows how conscientious one is and how precious the mitzvah is that he or she does not delay in its fulfillment. So therefore the question is, if one delays in this mitzvah, is he not ignoring this principle of Zrizin Makdimin L'mitzvah? And then there's a third halachic issue, which sounds a little bit far-fetched, but this is, in the Gemara it's discussed, and that is, well, if you delay in a mitzvah, maybe you'll die before you'll be able to perform the mitzvah. So by waiting, you run the risk of not fulfilling the mitzvah at all. And is that, and actually we have in Gemara, there is such a concern that we're not supposed to postpone something if the fear is that one will die and then obviously then not be able to fulfill the mitzvah at all. So, in Rav Schechter's article, he addressed these three issues. And that's what I felt I wanted to do as well. And of the three, probably the first one is the most important one, because if it's true that by delaying a mitzvah, it's as though you are violating the Torah for that amount of time, that sounds very serious, that you're actually violating the Torah. The other two issues are not as vital. They're there, I'm not saying it's not an issue, but, you know, often we might put off, you know, doing a mitzvah. We don't do it as soon as we have the opportunity to do it, but then we still do it, and we're not violating the Torah. We're not violating the Torah's obligation to perform that mitzvah. And on this issue, Rav Schechter in his article quoted from the Chazon Ish. I'm not going to go into the details of it. Actually, I did talk about it in the article, and I talked about what Rav Schechter said in a footnote, if you had a chance to see it. And Rav Schechter concluded in the article about the Chazon Ish, that the Chazon Ish concluded that in fact delaying, now the Chazon Ish did not talk about the mitzvah appropriation, he was talking just in general about any mitzvah saseh that is not time bound. And in it, Rav Schechter claimed that he said, that the Chazon Ish said, that actually postponing, delaying in the mitzvah is actually violating the law. So that very mitzvah, if you delay, it's as if you're violating that law during the time of the delay. And I checked on my own, I looked up the Chazon Ish, and I'm sorry to have to say, the Chazon Ish didn't say it. I didn't know what to... He said the opposite. And I've shown it to people who all have said the same thing. They don't know how you could read the Chazon Ish differently. But the Chazon Ish, actually, if you read it, he concludes that was something that he considered, that maybe you're violating the law. But then he concluded, based on a variety of reasons, he concluded that it's not a violation of the law itself in delaying the performance of that law. I don't know what to say. I even sent a letter to Rav Schechter about it, but he didn't respond. So I just don't know how Rav Schechter could have read it that way. I've told you I've shown it to people and they all read it the same way. And that's what really got me involved in this issue, because you know, if the Chazon Ish really didn't say it, then the question is, And then what's the prohibition about delaying procreation? So that was, in my article, that was the first thing that I addressed, that the Chazon Ish never said that it's a violation of the law. On the contrary, he said it's not. And I'm sort of at a loss of words how to, you know, reconcile what Rav Shechter said with the Chazon Ish. I can't. No way of reconciling that. So that was the first issue I addressed. The second issue was Zrizin Makdimin L'mitzvah, which means, again, that the conscientious try to observe the mitzvah fully. I mean, as quickly as possible. And which, of course, then the issue is, well, in the fulfillment of Pru Urvu, based on Zriza Makdimin LeMitzvah, wouldn't it therefore be better to fulfill the mitzvah as soon as possible? As soon as possible. So here, too, there's a discussion among Rishonim and Poskim about when do we apply that principle and when don't we apply that principle? And a case, a very interesting case, maybe we wouldn't have thought of such a case, where it comes up and actually it's discussed by Rishonim, and actually it's discussed in Shulchan Aruch, is the following case. The mitzvah of Kiddush Levana, we're all familiar with the mitzvah of Kiddush Levana. The question was asked, actually, of the Trumas Hadeshin, what will be if the earliest time you can fulfill the mitzvah of Kiddush Levana, let's say, would be Wednesday night. The question was, though, should we wait to fulfill the mitzvah of Kiddush Levana until Motzoi Shabbos, Saturday night? Why should we wait until then? The question was because we're all dressed in our Shabbos attire, and it would beautify the mitzvah if we're all dressed up, and we're Mekadesh Levana being dressed as we are from our Shabbos attire. And this is what the question that was asked of the Trumas Hadeshin, and he responded, yes, that we should wait. What about Zrizin Makdimin L'mitzvah? So after all, the earliest possible time to fulfill, if it would have been Wednesday night, so why wait? He says, because by waiting, the mitzvah will be enhanced. So the fulfillment would be more enhanced, would be a greater fulfillment, because the mitzvah will be beautified, and therefore it's better to wait. Of course, he did offer a condition, provided, of course, that after Saturday night, you'll still have a couple of nights to still fulfill the mitzvah, because what if it rains Saturday night? What if it's cloudy? You won't be able to see the Levana, so you still want to have a chance to fulfill it. So if Saturday night is going to be the last day that you could fulfill it, then no. But as long as you have an opportunity to fulfill it afterwards, then he would say, wait. And if you take a look in Shulchan Aruch, this is how we paskin. We paskin like the Trumas Hadeshin. So if you have a chance to say it Wednesday night, better to wait until Motzoi Shabbos, because the mitzvah, the fulfillment of the mitzvah will be enhanced. Well, so I thought that when it comes to the mitzvah of Pru Urvu, depending upon when the couple feels ready to have children, that will enhance the performance of that mitzvah. Try to imagine if a couple has children when they're really not ready, finances are not where they are, you might not get enough help, maybe the couple is scared, they're anxious, they would like a little more time. I mean, they'll do what they think, what they're told that they have to do, but the truth is they would feel a lot better if they were able to wait before having children. And, you know, the mitzvah of Pru Urvu is not just having children, but the mitzvah is to have a child, and then what happens to the child doesn't matter. That sounds insane. So part of the mitzvah is having children and raising them and caring for them. Now, if the couple is more psychologically prepared to care for their children if they waited, well, then that would enhance the fulfillment of the mitzvah. It really will. You know, I'm a psychotherapist as well. You know, and I hear cases about people, they're having children when they're not really ready, and it's causing a lot of psychological trauma for people. It's not such a simple thing. Well, it's not like, you know, some other mitzvah where the negative consequences are not really so severe. Here, it really depends on the psychological makeup of this couple. Because otherwise, if they're nervous and anxious, the child will be affected by it. So clearly, I think that in terms of Zrizah Makdima Mitzvah, if a couple feels that by waiting, they'll be able to fulfill the mitzvah much better because they're in a better psychological state, then on the contrary, I think that couple should wait until they feel ready. And the third issue that I raised was chayshinan lemisa. Do we have to be afraid that maybe the person will die and therefore be unable to fulfill the mitzvah, and therefore don't delay because maybe you'll die? Now, the truth is, I mean, this issue, you could approach it from a totally different perspective, which I didn't do in the article, and that is, well, what are the odds that people are going to die young or relatively young? I mean, we are, you know, people are living much longer lives now. The prospect of an early death is, I think, far more rare than, let's say, it was 1,000, 2,000 years ago. So I think that might be a factor, too, whether we still have this fear of dying. But I didn't even go there in the article. I just, assuming that, let's say, there is a fear of dying, again, if you go through the article, I tried to show, because in the cases in Gemara where that issue comes up of chayshinan lemisa, that we're afraid that someone might die, is a case where this person's death will affect another person. I'll give you an example. You know, on Yom Kippurim, the person who does the avoda is only the Kohen Gadol. He does the avoda on Yom Kippurim. And there's a halacha that says that the Kohen Gadol, in order to perform the avoda, he has to be married. So the issue came up. There was one opinion, there was one Tana who thought that let's be afraid that maybe his wife will die right before Yom Kippur, and then he won't be able to perform the avoda. So actually, I think it was Rabbi Yehuda who actually thought that maybe another woman should be designated as a possible wife for the Kohen Gadol in case his present wife were to die. Now, in that instance, her death will affect him, right? Because if she dies, if the wife dies, he won't be able to perform the avoda. So this was the Netziv who pointed out that this idea of chayshinan lemisa only applies where if this person were to die, then someone else would be adversely affected by it. Like in the case with the Kohen Gadol. However, argues the Netziv, what will be if the death of the person doesn't affect anyone else but himself? Which basically means is that if he dies, he won't be able to do the mitzvah. So the Netziv argued, well, if he died, he's putter from performing the mitzvah because dead people are not chayiv in performing mitzvahs. So, like, what exactly is the issue? So the Netziv argued that he wasn't talking about pruvu, he actually was talking about a different mitzvah where if the only person who'll suffer, will be affected, is the person who died. Well, then you don't have to worry. If he dies, he doesn't have to worry about that either because he's putter. He's onus, right? He's not alive. How can he perform the mitzvah? Therefore, based on the Netziv, I argue that in the mitzvah of Pru Urvu, obviously, if the man dies, well, then he's not chayv in the mitzvah anymore. It doesn't affect anybody but himself. He's the only person who's chayv in the mitzvah. So therefore, even if we consider that people might die at an earlier age, the halacha that maybe you should have to not delay because of this din of Hashina Mumisa wouldn't apply if the only person affected is the person who dies. So this is what I presented. And then I then turned to Shulchan Aruch. And the Shulchan Aruch, actually before Shulchan Aruch, I cited the Shitas HaRambam. And the Rambam is the only one who actually said something that the Chazon Ish had initially considered. And actually, the Rambam actually says what Rav Schechter thought the Chazon Ish concluded. And that is, if you read the Rambam says that if a person delays in marriage, the Rambam was talking about marriage, that if a man delays in getting married, and therefore having children, he is being mevatel the mitzvah of pruvu. So for the time of the delay, it's considered as though he's violating the law of pruvu. And the Rambam actually says it. What I showed in my article is that in Shulchan Aruch, we don't paskin that way, because there are other Rishonim who disagree with the Rambam. And I cited the opinion of the Rush, that the Rush actually says the following, that if a person delays marriage, right, but in delaying he has decided that he never wants to get married, then the courts, the Jewish courts, will force him to get married. Because he has made a decision that he never wants to marry. So the Pisrei Tshuva infers from this, this is what the Rush said, and this is what the Shulchan Aruch said. This is how the Shulchan Aruch paskin. He paskin like the Rush, that he added that if a person delays and never wants to get married, then the courts have a right to force him to get married. But the inference, which is a very clear inference, is what if he's delaying, but not because he doesn't want to get married, he just doesn't want to get married now. He wants to wait a couple of years, whatever it is. But he very much wants to get married, he very much wants to have a family. Then there's no violation of the law. So, now, if somebody wants to be machmir for himself and say, I want to follow the Rambam, fine. But we're discussing now whether we should be legislating this law for the public. Now, according to Shulchan Aruch, we don't paskin like the Rambam. And if you look it up, it's very clear. You see the Pisrei Tshuva, it's very clear. So, based on that, I therefore concluded that I don't see any basis, any strong basis, to tell people that they're not allowed to wait. The sources that I'm mentioning to you are just very solid. It's not like, you know, I'm grabbing at a straw. These are very solid sources that I'm mentioning. So to legislate to people that they're not allowed to delay, first of all, I don't think it's really supported by the sources. If a person wants to be machmer for himself, that's fine. But the question is, should we be machmer for everybody? Should we say to everybody, this is what you have to do? So I felt that based on what I've just told you, that the halacha does permit a delay. You know, and then in my article, I then addressed what actually is being done today. And whether what is being done today is a healthy situation, not a healthy situation. Now you tell me, you'll correct me if I'm wrong, but typically if a couple, they get married, and let's say they decide that they want to wait before having children, they'll go to a rav to ask the shaila. The rav will listen, and usually if it's newlyweds, he'll say to them, okay, you can wait 3 to 6 months, but after that, you know, don't use birth control. Have you heard this too? Now, I just don't understand where all this is coming from. What do I mean? If it's usher to delay, then what's the 6-month reprieve? Where did that come from? There's no basis for that. There's none. None. I checked. There's nothing. Nothing. There's no halacha that says it's usher, but you have a 6-month reprieve if the rabbi gives it to you. Rabbis can't be matir what is usher. You know, rabbi can't be matir isurim. If he's going to say something is mutter, it's because the halacha says it's mutter. So what is this? You come to a rav, you ask him. If he says no, then it's usher. If he says you have 6 months, it's mutter. There's no basis for that. There's really none. I think when I say it to you, I'm very frustrated because, I don't know, nobody wants to talk about this. Nobody talks about it. And so, what is going on? Now, if you believe that the Rambam is right, and that we should all follow the Rambam, then unless it's sakanas nefashos, a couple says, we want to wait, the answer should be, no, you can't wait. You can't wait. Because if you wait, you're violating the law. That should be the answer. What is this 6 months? And then you come back to the Rav. What happens after 6 months, very typically, if the couple still wants to wait a little longer, they got to come back, and they present the whole argument to the Rav, why they feel they need to wait. The Rav will assess it. If he thinks it's valid, he'll say, okay, you have another 6 months. And if he doesn't think it's valid enough, he'll say, no, you can't. What is that? What is that? So I don't think there's any halachic basis. I'm saying it very categorically because I really believe that there's no halachic basis for telling a couple, it's usher, but you got 6 months. It's mutter now, but it's going to be usher in 6 months. Either it's mutter or it's usher. And if it's mutter, then what's this arbitrary time of 6 months or 3 months or 8 months, whatever numbers they'll use? There is none. Now, so I just don't understand their position. Those rabbanim who do say this, no one has ever written an article. I wrote this article about almost 5 years ago. And I don't know, maybe people haven't read it. I have no idea, but I haven't seen any article written since to argue with what I wrote. I haven't seen anything. So, I don't know. I don't know what that means. So, I don't understand this other position. I don't understand it. Well, either it's us or it's muta. What is this sort of middle position? It's us or unless we allow it. Well, if it's us or they can't allow it. And if it's muta, then why are they saying wait 6 months only? You have 6 months to wait. It just doesn't, halachically, there's no basis for this. So that was one thing I addressed in the article, that I really don't understand the halachic basis for the way, for those rabbanim who do this, what is their reason for this? Then in my article, I also, which is what the closing part of my article was, I cited from the Rama, which to me was probably the most important part, because the Rama says the following, and he's citing from, where's he citing from again? One second. The Rivash. He's citing from the Rivash, he's one of the Rishonim. The Rivash was asked the following question. There was a young man who has not yet fulfilled the mitzvah of Puruvu. He wanted to marry a woman who was beyond the age of reproduction, and he wanted to marry her. She was a wealthy woman. He was interested in financial security, and she wanted a companion, and they wanted to get married. And the case, so the community in which they lived was outraged by it, and they wanted to force this man not to marry this woman, because he has to marry a woman who can give him children. So the case was sent, the question was sent to the Rivash. And the Rivash gave the most amazing answer, and the Ramah in Shulchan Aruch quotes it. What the Rivash said was that when it comes, even though technically the community has the right to do so, the practice, this is what the Rivash writes, the practice has been for generations not to compel a couple to marry or not to marry. That we no longer compel a couple. And his words were, "He'elimu einehem." They hid their eyes from what is going on between a husband and a wife. They hid their eyes. They looked the other way, not to interfere. And the Rivash went on to say even that even if the couple, he gave other examples, is doing something that's keneged halacha, as long as their marriage is a legitimate marriage, in other words, it's not that a man is marrying a relative that he's not allowed to marry, you know, as long as the marriage is legitimate, even if they're doing something that's against the halacha, this is what the Rivash writes, we don't interfere. We step away. We let them do what they want, as long as the marriage itself is legitimate. Now, if the couple themselves are fighting about something that they need some resolution, yeah, then the Rav could be the one to solve a problem. But otherwise, to interfere, to intrude in any way, even if what the couple is doing is usur, no, not to do so. And if you look in Shulchan Aruch, the Ramah cites this opinion of the Rivash. And therefore the Ramah says, we don't force anybody to do anything when it comes to marital matters. And therefore I think that when it comes to delaying, when I don't even think it's usur to delay, Allah has kama v'kama that Rabbanim should not be pressuring couples to have children when they don't feel ready to have children. This is what the Ramah, the Rivash wrote, that we don't interfere. It's very funny because I had this, it was printed in Ma'orot, which is a publication of Chovevei Torah. It actually wasn't my first choice. I had tried to get it published in other journals. I'm not going to mention which ones, but ones that you all know. And they wouldn't publish it. And one of the reasons that one of the journals gave me, the editorial board, whoever examined the, read my submission, said is because I'm limiting the role of the Rabbanim. Because I'm saying now that Rabbanim shouldn't be deciding these issues, that the couple should decide for themselves. So I'm limiting the role of the Rabbanim. So my reaction is, I'm not doing it. The Rivash did it. The Ramah did it. I didn't do it. He said that Rabbanim should not interfere into these issues. Okay? So, so therefore, this is why I strongly feel that if a couple feels a need to wait. Now, if a couple wants to discuss it with someone just to feel that they need someone to talk to about it, of course. And whomever the couple feels they want to talk to, they should. But the decision is theirs. And this brings me to really a very important part of this, and that is the psychological fallout by not allowing the couple to make its own decision. You know, think about it. It would never occur to anybody to tell a man or a woman whom they should marry, that we're going to decide for them who should marry, who one should marry. Would it ever occur to you to say that a Rav or anybody should decide for you where you should live, what house you should buy? And think about, when you think about the decisions, the important decisions that a person makes in his life, think about it. Marriage, children, maybe profession. where you want to live. I think about what are the really, really important decisions in one's life. You know, you can start naming them, but I think marriage and children will be at the top of the list. Psychologically, what would it mean if we were to say to a couple, no, no, you don't decide this. We're going to decide it for you. Think what that does. First of all, it's very infantilizing. I think you're treating people as children. But think about what's happening. They go to the Rav and they tell a story of why they want to delay. And the Rav hears, and if he agrees with them, they'll say, okay, you can wait. Well, who knows what is going on with the couple? Why they're coming to the Rav to delay? Who knows what's really going on with the couple? They know. You think another person really, really knows psychologically what's going on underneath, what the anxiety levels are, the fears? Nobody can know. So taking away, so there are several things that I'm pointing out here. Personal autonomy is vital for an adult. You take away personal autonomy in areas that are the most important decisions in one's life, you feel like you're being treated as a child. It's infantilizing. And that is very unhealthy, I think, psychologically. You know, a sense of self, self-esteem, these are very, very important things. Like I see in my practice, you know, people, self-esteem is a very big thing. And there are a lot of reasons why people have low self-esteem. You take away decisions, important decisions in their lives, how does that make you feel? As though I can't decide. I don't know enough. I don't know what's good for me. Now, a 10-year-old who says, I want to do this, parent could say, I know better. But a 25-year-old, a 30-year-old, a 35-year-old, somebody else knows better than what you're really feeling. And to take that choice away, it's very damaging. That's why I feel very strongly about this topic. It's not just, well, I'll do this way or that way, but there's no consequence. There is a consequence, because I think it's psychologically damaging. It can be. Now, if a person, if a couple wants to go to a Rav, and they want the advice of the Rav, and they really believe in the Rav, and they want to follow, and that's what they want to do, fine. And I hope it works out for them. But the notion that you have to, and if you don't do it, you're somehow violating tradition, you're violating halacha, I don't think that's true at all. So, I hope I've captured, you know, the basic theme of my article here. And I know that I'm sort of the only, I don't know, maybe other people feel the same, but they don't come out publicly and say it. Because I know that Rabbanim give heterim. They're giving it all the time. So, they're giving heterim. What does that all mean? But they're still holding on to say, well, now it's usur. It doesn't make sense. Halakhically, it doesn't make sense. Okay.
Now for questions.
Okay.
If anybody has more questions, there are more cards, let us know. Let's go with the questions first.
Okay.
So that's going to be questions.
Okay, I'll just read it. If a couple is financially sound and not anxious or scared, they just don't want to have kids, is that okay? They're delaying. Well, I'm not sure what it means. They don't want to have kids. They don't want to ever have kids, or they just don't want to have kids now. I'm not sure what. If they don't want to ever have kids, well, what are you going to do? If they don't want to have kids, what are you going to do? I mean, are they aware that there's a mitzvah to have children, so they want to fulfill the mitzvah or not? So I don't. If they do want to have kids, but they want to wait, well, then there's got to be a reason why they want to wait. So, you know, to say that they're not anxious, I don't think that's necessarily true. Then what's holding them back? If they believe in family, if they want to be Mekayim the Mitzvah Pru Urvu, everything is set, financially they're set, everything is set, they have jobs, they have a home, they have everything that they need, well then, and they want to perform the mitzvah, so what holds them back? So that's why in this question, I don't know if this is an accurate description of what's really going on. If they still want to wait, that means something's going on. And therefore, if they still feel they want to wait, I will not interfere with them. Because that just means that there's something going on that maybe they themselves don't realize, but there's something holding them back. Again, I'm assuming that they want to fulfill the mitzvah. They're committed, you know, frum people. If they don't want to fulfill the mitzvah at all, then that's a whole different thing. They'll do whatever they want, and they're not going to go to a rav if they don't want to have children. They're going to do whatever they want. Okay. Once this was published, what was the reaction? Did anyone object to it? I got no reaction. I don't know. Nobody spoke to me. I don't know. At this point, given the spirit of the time, do you think it could be considered precious min hatzibur not to ask a rav? Well, if being parish min hatzibur, if not being parish min hatzibur results in harm, then to me it's a mitzvah to be parish min hatzibur, because it's a mitzvah to guard yourself, to keep yourself healthy. So, no, I don't think that's a problem. Okay, what about Shechva Zera Levatela? This is a good question, but this has to do with the method of contraception, which I didn't discuss at all in the article, how there are some methods of contraception that the Torah prohibits. So, of course, if one is, if a couple are using birth control, it would have to be a method of birth control that the halacha permits. And the halacha does permit certain types of birth control. Because in all, even in the more right wing, even in the Hasidic communities, women are using birth control. They're not having babies necessarily one after the other. They wait. There's a little bit of spacing going on. So they're using birth control. So for example, the pill, when the pill was introduced, that was a method that, again, there could be side effects which might be halakhically significant, so that has to be worked out. But the pill is a form of birth control that is halachically permitted. Okay. It's not considered to be wasting sperm. The question was, I learned the reason not to delay was because all future sex would result in wasting sperm. That's not true. I mean, what will be if a person can't have children? Let's say a woman is barren, so what? He can't have sex with her, the husband. There's no such thing. Even though you can say the sperm is being wasted, it's not true. A normal sex is permitted even if there won't be a pregnancy from it. As long as the movement of the sperm is not impeded. That's really what the halach is about. Okay? Okay. This question is a good question too. There's a mitzvah derabanan of having as many children as one can. So if there is a mitzvah to have as many children as you can, obviously if you delay, you know, you might not be able then to have as many children as you can. Well, it's true. You won't be able to. But people are not machines. You know, we have a mouth to eat. That doesn't mean we eat 24/7. Now, women are capable of having children. Does that mean they have to have a children every 9 months? She'll die if she tries to do that. We're only human. So at the one hand, yes, you know, Orthodox Jews tend to have larger families than the secular population. In the secular world, 1 to 2 children, that's it. That's a big family already. For us, you know, even in the modern Orthodox camp, we have no children. But to say that I have to have a child when I'm not ready, when I'm anxious, when it's harmful to me because I have to populate the world, there's no such thing that you have to hurt yourself in this way. And it's not just yourself you're hurting. You're hurting the child. That's an important thing that people are not realizing. If the couple, if the mother and father are not in the right frame of mind, it's not just that they're going to have a rough time. So will the children have a rough time. So it's very important that the parents are in the right psychological framework when they're having children, because it will affect the child. So I don't think that you have to risk making it difficult for yourself and for your children because you want to populate the world. I think it's counterproductive. What is the idea of populating the world if the children that you're raising are troubled because you're troubled? And this is happening. It's not like I'm talking about some fantasy. This is happening. This is happening in the real world. Okay. What else? Okay, Rabbi Naybrook in YU once said in the Shir that he won't give a heter for birth control because too many women suffer from infertility. Can you speak about that? I mean, there are people who are infertile, so therefore, let's say you have to have as many children as you can because there's that other woman who can't have children. Really, with all due respect, I mean, that is the most outrageous argument I've ever heard. With all due respect, I mean, what am I supposed to, I don't have a life? My life is not important. My own sanity is not important. I think there's also a very big mistake that there's an attitude, okay, so you have the child. What's the big deal? You'll adjust. Well, some people do it, and that's fine. But there are some people who don't, or they adjust very poorly. And therapists see it in the office. I see it. So it's not so simple to say, well, let them have the child. They'll figure it out. Yeah, they will. And maybe they'll be perfectly fine, and kol hakavod, and that would be great. I'm worried about the couple that will find it hard. And therefore the child will suffer. And the parents will suffer. And I don't think there's a mitzvah to suffer in order to raise a family. I think it's counterproductive. It's harmful to the parents and to the child. Potentially harmful. What's this? Wow. Was your halachic analysis influenced by feminist ideologies pertaining to birth control? I don't know. What feminist ideologies? I'm not quite sure I know what the... what feminist ideologies? What, that women should have more control over their bodies? Is anybody opposed? I don't, is that what they mean? Is that what's meant by feminist ideologies? I think couples should decide on children because it's affecting their lives. I don't know. It's a feminine. I think it's a masculine thing too. I don't know. It's not just feminist. It affects the man too, not just the woman. Why is it a feminist thing? I think that people should control this aspect of their life. I think it's very important. I don't think others should control it for them, especially when it's not halachically required, and especially in light of the Ramah that says that Rabbanim should step away. And when it comes to marital matters. So I really feel that this is the Rivash in the Middle Ages who said this. To me, it's very profound to step away. Think about that. We're talking about in the Middle Ages, somebody said it. Okay. Is it ever fair to let feminism affect the Pesak Din? First of all, we're assuming that feminism is a dirty word. I don't know. What do you mean by feminism? Is a very broad thing. What do you mean by it? What is meant by feminism? Feminism is what? That you want to get equal pay for equal work? You don't want to be enslaved? What is it? You want to be treated with respect? You want to have opportunities to go to school, to college, graduate school like the men do? Is that called feminism? Well, if it is, I'm all for it, so I'm a feminist then. What's wrong? I don't have a feminist. There's not a feminist agenda here that's against halacha. This is not a feminist agenda. I think this is just a a human being agenda about what doing something that's right for people. Not because it's a woman and we're interested into, as though feminism is something bad. I don't, you know, it all depends how you use that word. Okay? What about the issue of delaying in terms of fertility? It's not Hashim and Nisa, but it's still a pshash to some degree. And you mean that by waiting, the chances of pregnancy are less? Should couples maybe wait to get married until they can have children? Is that the ideal situation? Why yes and why no? Should couples wait? Well, you know, waiting until they can have children, you know, there are a lot of issues, you know, for a religious couple, a man and a woman, waiting is very hard. But waiting to get married, it's a very difficult thing. For a religious man and a religious woman to have to wait. So to say, you know, don't get married until you're ready, I don't think that that's a viable, that that's a healthy option. I think it would create other problems. I'm not quite sure about the first part about fertility. Well, obviously, I don't know what the statistics are, but clearly women who are in their 20s, listen, if a couple wants to have children, they're not going to wait until where there could be a problem. I'm assuming if they want to have children, but we're talking about delaying until, we're talking about a period of time until they feel that this is right. So if they're getting married at the age of 20, that's another important thing. You know, there's a pressure to get married at a young age. And you get married at the age of 22, it's really hard. Or maybe they want to wait a few years. Until they sort of, you know, grow, they sort of get used to each other. There's a lot of, you know, what has to go on, you know, for a couple. It's really a very, very hard situation. It can be. So to wait until they're 25, I don't think that's a fertility issue. Yeah, if they want to wait until they're 35, you see, I think a firm couple wouldn't do that because they know that and they want to have children. So I don't really see that. Again, I'm talking about a firm couple. If they're not from, then they're not going to go to a rav. They're going to do what they want anyway. Okay. Who decides how much is too much delay? The couple decides, because they know best. They know better than anyone else what they're really feeling. Nobody can know as much as they know. And that's very important, too, to realize. No rav, I don't care how smart he is. I couldn't, if I sat with you, I don't know what's really, really going on inside of you. You might be a cauldron of anxiety, and I don't know. And certainly meeting you for one time and sitting with you for a half an hour, I'm going to know everything about you from that one 30-minute meeting. That's crazy, I can't. How do I know what's really churning inside of you? I don't know. So who really knows? You know. And that's why it's for you to decide when to have children, you and your husband, to decide when you're going to have children. Can a couple choose not to have children? Of course they can choose it, but it's against the halacha. The Torah says to have children. You know, they can do whatever they want, but if you're talking about being mekayim, the mitzvah satara, there's a mitzvah of the arise of pruvu, there's a mitzvah of the rabbanon of also having as many children as you can. But that doesn't mean not to do it in a way where it's good and healthy for the parents and the children. That's the point that I'm making. You do it in a way that's healthy and that's right for you. What's right for you might not be right for you. Everybody is different. That's also another thing. If you put everybody in the same mold, people are going to get hurt because everybody is different. Okay? Should people just be marrying at a later age if they wish to pursue grad school, etc.? Instead of marrying younger and planning to use birth control. Again, that's the point that I made earlier. I don't know if that's a good idea because it means remaining celibate until you get married for a religious men and women, it's extremely, extremely hard. So I don't know if you try to solve one problem but create another problem. This is also very unhealthy. It could lead to other kinds of problems. So no, I don't think that's a good idea. I think couples, if they want to get married at a young, whatever age they want to get married, you know, let them. But as far as the mitzvah of pur vu, that should be their decision. Are there any special concerns when considering freezing eggs? Halachically, I don't know. I don't see why there should be, but I really don't. I've never researched that topic. You mentioned in your article that there has been a heightened inclination amongst your students to ask you about delay in procreation. What do you think is the basis of this change? I think because that's what people feel now, that it's usher, and that you have to get a heter. If I understood the question correctly, that without a heter, you're not allowed to delay. That's why people come. Why do people go to a rav? Why are they going to a rav? Why are they going to anybody? Isn't it because they think that they have to? Is the don't look attitude of the Rivosh limited to the community's responsibilities? Okay. Regardless of the community stepping back, there might still be a preferred course of action halachically for the couple. It might be preferred, but Rabbanim are not to... For example, one of the things that the Rivosh mentioned was, you know, there's a din from the Gemara, we pass it in Shulchan Aruch, that if a couple has been married for 10 years and they're childless, technically he should divorce his wife and marry another woman so that he can have children. So the Rivosh wrote that if a couple doesn't want to get divorced after, let's say, 10 years of being childless, we will not interfere. Now, if you'll ask me, if somebody wants to follow the halacha, because that's what the Gemara says and that's how we paskin in Shulchan Aruch, and the couple, they want to do that because they want to have children, and that's what they want to do. You could say that's a preferred thing because the halacha says so, but if the couple doesn't want to get divorced, the issue is, should a rav come in and say, no, you got to get divorced? So that's where the Rivosh said no. Now, what would be the preferred? Well, if you take what the halacha says as the preferred, the preferred solution, then you could say, well, you know, to get divorced. But if you come to a rav and ask him, tell me what I should do, according to the Rivosh, he said, I'm not telling you what to do. You do what you think is correct. I think that's what he said. Okay. In terms of the 3 to 6 month delay answer that rabbis give, is it possible that although delaying is mutter, there is a certain attitude of seriousness and weight we are trying to give to this as a society? Might there also be a negative impact to indiscriminately encourage birth control? To suggest that when couples come to delay to a rov, that they lack a certain degree of seriousness, I think is very condescending and, again, infantilizing. Because they want to delay, that means they're not serious. If I answer the question, that means they're not serious about the mitzvah of pur vu. Why would you say that? They are serious. Maybe that's why they want to wait, because they really want to do it at a time that they feel best to fulfill it. I don't think it's an indication of a lack of seriousness. I think the very question is working from a premise that somebody else knows better as what's best for you. And if you don't want to do what I do, that's because you're not a serious person. Because I know better. I don't know better what's best for you. what you really think is in your best interest. Only you know that. So no, I don't think that by you know, wanting a delay is an indication of a lack of seriousness. And I don't think what negative impact to indiscriminately encourage birth control. I'm encouraging people to decide when they want to have children because I think it's the healthiest way. I don't see this. Look, if people don't want to have children, then they won't. But again, I'm not addressing such couples. I'm addressing couples that want to have children. But the question is, they want to wait, they want to space it in a way. Or they want to wait when they just get married until they adjust. They want to wait a year, they want to wait 2 years. Whatever, it doesn't matter. I don't really think that it would... I think it would have a very positive effect. I think it would make marriages and raising children much healthier. That's what I think. What is this? If there are those that hold strictly by the Rambam, in all areas of halacha, is there still room to allow the couple to wait based on the psychological damage that could occur? That's a very good question. Let's say Sfardim, who, yes, they follow the Rambam, and they always pass them like the Rambam. So I don't know enough about, because I don't know for sure, but are there, I don't know Sephardic, you know, traditions well, whether they always follow, but see, they follow the Mechaber, the Shulchan Aruch, and the Shulchan Aruch didn't follow the Rambam here. So I don't know what actual, if there are people who actually follow the Rambam. So if, you know, if they follow always the Rambam, but it's not, that's not necessarily what the halacha is, but they've always had a practice of following the Rambam, and now in this instance they don't want to, then they would need a Hataras Nedarim. You know what I'm saying? You need a Hataras Nedarim. So you have a Hataras Nedarim, because now you feel it's not in my best interest to follow the Rambam. But that's what I think would be required if in this instance one did not want to follow because, for the many reasons that I just discussed, maybe a couple will decide that they don't want to, it's not in their best interest, it's not good for them, and even though they normally follow the Rambam, then usually what happens, you would need a Hataras Nedarim. And I think you would get one. I guess it depends who you're going to go to for the Hataras Nedarim. Okay. I saw that already. Is this the one that was just done? There's another question. What should a couple do if they already asked this Rav and he said no, not to delay? Should they just ignore the psak of the Rav? See, I think that this is a whole topic in itself. The idea that once you ask one Rav, that's it, you're not allowed to go to anybody else, you got to follow that because that's the person who you asked. That's not necessarily true. But I don't know the topic well enough to answer that. I have to... Because there are parameters, but I don't think it's any time one Rav, you want to one Rav, and that's it. You're sort of stuck. As if the Rav said it's usher. I don't think it's true, but again, I would have to research it more to really give a full answer. But that's a very good question. If a couple asked you if they should still get married, if they know they won't be able to marry. I'm not trying to send the question. They ask you if they should still get married if they know they won't be able to get married.
I'm not sure. I'm answering if they can't have kids. They know they can't have kids.
Oh. Okay, this is... Well, according to the Rivash and the Ramah, they would say that a Rav should not interfere.
Right,
if they came to you. If they came to me, I don't know. That's very hard. Well, I guess if I'm following the Rivosh and the Ramah, I would say this is your decision. Assuming again that you know that they're religious people, and they know there's a mitzvah to have children. Now, this is the whole thing about Tay-Sachs, you know, you're familiar with. So now there's Tay-Sachs testing that is done. But it used to be where, you know, two people got married and they discovered they're both carriers. And it would be, you know, it meant death for the children. So, but here, let's say if you know in advance, you know even before you marry this person that you're not going to be able to have children. But again, according to the Rivosh and the Ramah, I would say it's not for me to decide. This is something that you would have to decide. Whatever they decide would be it. Okay.
Todd, thank you very much for your very insightful words.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for your halachic integrity and sharing it with others. And this recording will be on YU Torah later tonight. And we will send out an Esped and YSTED for anybody who would like that recording. And for those of you who would like to stay to speak to Hannah Dreyfus, the press, Hannah is raising her hand. So that's Hannah. And you're welcome to speak to her. Again, thank you, Rebecca.
Very welcome.
And thank you for everyone who helped me make that possible.
And does anybody have any last minute questions?
Alrighty.
Okay.
Have a good night, everybody.